number three of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson, and we normally say hello to Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com at this point in time, but Brent able to catch his breath just a little bit, but we're pleased to get a second visit this week with the one and only Rob Lewis of VolQuest.com. He joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Rob, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Big shoes to fill. I'm going to try to step up.
Well, I think you're up to the challenge, as you've proven time and time again. And no doubt about it, yesterday, Big Orange Country lost one of its best, one of its most unique, and one of its most important treasures in John Majors. And I'm just wondering, first and foremost, when you think about the coach, the VFL, what comes to mind first?
I mean, we're close to the same age, John, late 20s, early 30s. So, Seriously, I mean, growing up, I mean, Johnny Majors was the face of Tennessee football for me. I mean, that was, I was born a little bit before he came back, but, you know, when I was early in grade school and, you know, really getting into following college football, both my parents went to UT. So, you know, obviously that's where the rooting interest in my household was. So, I mean, he just embodied, you know, the program more than any one player. I mean, that wasn't the mid to late 70s week when he came back. Obviously, was not a great era in Tennessee history. He inherited kind of slowly put the pieces back together. So to me, he was more recognizable than, you know, any player really in early on. And I didn't even know about him as a player, probably. I don't know when I became aware of that. Probably, you know, sometime, you know, to 6th, 7th grade, and that kind of only added, you know, to his stature, to when he found out about, you know, his legacy as, you know, one of the best players in the program. And I can remember seeing him. He was pretty, you know, he was pretty much a man of the people. I can remember seeing him at basketball games at Stoke Big Arena, just, you know, going to the concession stand, walking around, you know, talking to folks. And that was just like, you know, seeing a movie star when you're 8, 9, 10 years old. And I think he deserves tons of credit. I mean, it wasn't easy. It wasn't smooth all the way. But, you know, from what the program was when he inherited it to, you know, winning SEC titles and then giving the program some of its most signature wins. I mean, you could pull a lot of Vol fans today, and I still bet they'll put the Sugar Bowl win over Miami over a lot of some of them probably remember that one more fondly than the national championship game, when you talk about really Tennessee announcing itself as being back on the national stage. And, you know, the kind of talent he brought in the 80s, I mean, some of those guys are still, you know, on the short list for the greatest players to ever play here. We'll talk Dale Carter, just springs to mind, Carl Pickens, so Chuck Webb, Reggie Cobb. I mean, maybe you could just keep rolling them off. So, I mean, to say he was an icon, you know, a giant, I don't know, you know, really how you wrap it all up to capture what he meant to Tennessee football and to the people around the state, too.
Do you have a personal memory of him that is your favorite, or perhaps something he said or did that really stands out to you?
Jimmy, I mean, I just remember the games more than anything. Like, I mentioned the Sugar Bowl win over Miami. I can't believe that I didn't mention the miracle at South Bend in there as well. And I just remember his demeanor, you know, just, you know, all so full of spit and vinegar on the sidelines. I mean, I think he really represented Tennessee football in a way that a lot of people across this state appreciated. I mean, he sounded like he was from a small town in Tennessee. Growing up, I liked that. I mean, he was a snazzy dresser on the sidelines, but I wouldn't necessarily say that he was polished. You know, he let his personality come through. And I think, you know, I know quite a few of his former players that lives in town, and they revered him. I mean, they love is, you know, kind of a cliche that you throw around, but the guys that I know loved Coach Majors and respected him a lot.
Rob, Tennessee has had a number of players come back to campus. It started on Wednesday. They'll go through the weekend. They will have basketball players coming back in the middle of June. There have already been some cases at other schools where there have been some positive tests with players returning. What are your thoughts going forward with Tennessee? I know they've got a lot of precautions in place, but your thoughts going forward with Tennessee's football players returning?
Jimmy, I just think it's going to have to be something that you learn to live with. I mean, you're not going to eradicate, you know, obviously we're not going to eradicate the virus right now, but, and this, I don't mean to sound callous But I mean, it's just something that you're going to have to live with and learn to live with. And we're also talking about, you know, the percentage of the population that is at the lowest risk of, you know, anybody in the country, from everything that I've read, not only age wise, but in terms of physical condition for most of these guys. So, I mean, yeah, test kids, you know, isolate kids, but I mean, you just can't tear it all up and throw it away when you get some positive tests, because I think that's unavoidable.
Yeah, that would be difficult to do. Tennessee strength and conditioning coach, I don't know that they've announced one yet. I think they will very soon. I think it might be somebody that they promote from within. But your thoughts on how important it is now that players are returning to have a strength and conditioning coach in place?
Oh, I think it's a big deal, Jimmy. And as you said, I think it's pretty clear that's going to be an in-house hire for Jeremy Pruitt, and I think that's why there's not been a rush. But I do think that we'll hear that happen here in the next little bit. And I think it's a big deal. I mean, I know we talk about it a lot on the show, that the strength and conditioning aspect of your program is enormous. I mean, and who leads it is enormous, because that guy spends more time with, you know, the players in the off season than anybody else on staff. And he's the one that's sending the message, that's helping, you know, to continue to help build the culture, to set, you know, making sure that you're doing things to the standard that the head coach has set. And so from that standpoint, I think a lot of guys can, you know, yell and scream and, you know, clap in a weight room and you know, teach technique and that kind of thing. But I think attitude, discipline, energy, those are the things that you're looking for in that position.
Our guest, Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com. If you have a question or comment for Rob, 656-9900, 656-9900. The hour brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. From design to installation, the team at Diversified has you covered. View their portfolio online at sunandscreen.com. Let's check in with Michael. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Michael.
Hey, John. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. How are you?
Just fine. Jimmy, you doing okay?
I'm doing fine, Michael. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be able to talk to you all. And I just wanted to give a little recruiting story that I knew about way back in around 1982 from Powell High School. There was a couple guys that were my best friends that got recruited by Mr. Majors, and they played in the 86 Sugar Bowl on the offensive line, Mr. Daryl Smith, late Daryl Smith, and Mr. John Bruin. Mm-hmm. And I was so proud of them when I saw them on the television, and they played their guts out and beat those old boys that were so arrogant. I was so proud of my friends.
Could certainly see that. That had to be one of the coolest things to witness.
Yes, sir. Knowing them since the seventh grade and, you know, talking to them and everything. And I remember Coach Majors coming over to recruit Daryl, and Daryl always wanted to be a tight end, which his son, Lee, ended up being. But they got him over there, and Coach Fulmer said, listen, he said, I'll make you an NFL player if you want to play on the offensive line. And sure enough, he bulked him up, and he became an offensive lineman, great lineman for Tennessee and for Dallas and for the Lions and for Philadelphia.
That's incredible.
Yeah, such good memories. All of this brings back so many good memories. Me and my mom together, we've been watching UT football and basketball since about 1973, and it sure was sad to hear about Coach Majors, but, you know, we love him. He'll be an icon forever. We'll never forget him.
Michael, we sure do appreciate it. Thank you very much. And, Rob, that's always got to be something to see, and, of course, doing what you do and working with VolQuest as long as you have, when you see those young men from Knoxville especially or East Tennessee that have grown up here and get that opportunity to wear the orange and white, that's, it's always special when you could see them do something and stand out like that.
It is. I mean, and I don't mean to minimize what it means for anybody, because I think you don't have to be from Tennessee to love your school, to love your university. But I do think it hits home a little more if you grew up, you know, especially, you know, if you're my age, if you grew up and you can remember where, you know, every game wasn't on TV, where, you know, people loved it enough to you know, basically listen to John Ward 10 games out of the year for 3 hours, you know, 3.5 hours. constantly, you know, sitting in the living room with whatever game might be on national television that week on mute. And, I mean, if your granddad, you know, if you shared that with your granddad, or if you grew up, you know, driving 3 hours every Saturday to, you know, from somewhere out of town to Neyland Stadium to watch Tennessee play, to tailgating, if your mom had a big orange, you know, welcome mat on the doorstep. I mean, I just think it means more to those kids when they do get the opportunity to, you know, kind of live out what's been a dream since they were, you know, 5 or 6.
That's Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com, pinch hitting for Brent Hubbs today. With Jimmy Himes, I'm John Wilkerson. Rob joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break and be back with more as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
If we were a sports car, we'd be red, fast, and expensive. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Well, I got down off the shoulders when I shook hands with Coach Bryant. After all, he'd ridden a lot of shoulders against a lot of coaches through the past, and I got off and he says, Johnny, said you had a good game plan.
When Johnny comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah, we'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah.
Sports Talk continues. Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com joining us today, pinch hitting for Brent Hubbs. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Let's go to Jeremy, who joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well. How are good. You?
Pretty good. Rob, I've got two questions. One's a recruiting one for the cornerbacks of this class. Want to know, where do you think Tennessee stands with Terry and Arnold, or maybe if we're still in the picture for Nyland Green or an Isaiah Johnson?
Out of the trio you just mentioned right there, I think Terry and Arnold is the one Tennessee has the best shot at. He's a Florida kid, and they're in a battle with Florida for him. But it feels to me like Derek Andrew really has Tennessee, you know, kind of entrenched with him. I think that going to be, I don't think you're going to decide anything quickly, which is good for Tennessee because you want to get him here on campus. Now, he's a Tallahassee kid, so it's not like he's exactly in Florida's backyard. And off topic, with Florida State's got some issues to deal with at the moment. So, I don't think the Seminoles seem like they're a factor. You know, I lean Florida, but the only reason is because of distance. I do think he legitimately likes Tennessee, and I also think he's a big-time athlete.
Okay, then my final question or opinion is for all three of you. I think it's kind of been overlooked, or maybe it's been – I don't really get to listen to radio a lot. But, you know, with everything going on and now kids getting back to campuses for, you know, hopefully summer workouts, I think it's huge that Tennessee and the ones who did get to make a bowl game got the extra – 4 or 5 weeks of bowl practice compared to the new programs like Ole Miss and the other programs are starting off new.
Yeah, I agree, and I'll go one further with that. I think it's huge an advantage for Tennessee as opposed to others that they do have so many returning starters, so many upperclassmen. This is not a year where you're trying to, you know, pick out, you know, 6 or 7 freshmen who maybe can help you in the two deep somewhere. Tennessee brings back a lot of guys, a lot of fifth-year guys, including their quarterback. And I think, you know, certainly everybody would have preferred to have spring practice and a normal offseason, but I think when you've got as many veterans as Tennessee has, that you know, kind of it helps them out as far as when you look around the rest of the conference.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, Rob.
I was just going to say, Jim, I think maybe for the first time in forever, I don't know that Tennessee will have a freshman start this year. Anywhere. They could. You know, something could happen. Yeah. Certainly injuries could change things. But I think coming out of the gate, out of the 22, I don't know that you'll see a freshman in the starting lineup.
And in all likelihood, if one does, it's because he's shown that he's got the job as opposed to having to be thrown in.
Yes. Which has not been the case of late in some instances.
Yeah. No, what I was going to say is that, Jeremy, you already mentioned that, and Jimmy, you've talked about it, that really unfortunate for new coaches transitioning to take over a new program that you don't get your traditional spring practice. In fact, some didn't get anything in regards to a practice or two. But you also look at a school like Georgia, where they have one returning starter on the offensive line. And for Tennessee, I believe that they would have if Cade Mays gets the waiver, he would be the only, I guess, newcomer in terms of potential starter for the offensive line. And when you've got a unit like that that's got experience and some a little bit of depth, that's you can find yourself a little bit further down the road than some teams that were trying to see who wins what spot on the depth chart.
Yeah, and I was and I've been mulling over what Rob Lewis said about a freshman starting, and he's probably right. But I was trying to think of who might have the best chance to start. And although I think it's a long shot, I wonder if possibly one of the wide receivers, depending on how good they are when they get here, and maybe Keyshawn Lawrence.
Uh-huh. Lawrence would be my guy, Jimmy. Assuming he plays at safety. With the need there with Warrior departing, and I don't, you know, outside, you know, Theo Jackson has played a lot, but he's been in and out of the lineup. Kenneth George, Jalen McCullough, you know, had some nice moments last year, but that's the only spot where I think a likely spot where, and Keyshawn Lawrence is a big time talent coming in.
Yes.
I think he's got a lot of potential, which also factors in.
I think Tennessee, I know somebody debated me with the other day, I think Tennessee has a chance to be okay at receiver. I think they're about average as far as SEC. Maybe they can be a little better than that. I don't know if I think that a pass rusher like a Marvin Joseph is ready to step in and start. I think he'd be a spot player. Like that. So I think you could see that. But it was just a really interesting point. I hadn't really thought about no freshman starting. But, Rob, I think you're probably right. I think that Tennessee has built up enough depth at the positions that they have that they won't need to have a freshman start.
Yeah, I agree. And at receiver, Jimmy, I agree with you. It depends on being better than average. It could depend to me entirely on what D'Angelo Gibbs turns into and what kind of a jump Ramel Keaton can make. Because I think those are two talented guys, but, you know, really haven't done much.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, one of the weekly podcasts we do where we go back and rewatch a game from last season and kind of break it down. We watched Missouri last week, and boy, and Josh Palmer. He made some incredible catches in that game. And you can really see the potential for him to be a number one. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to give you what Juwan Jennings gave you last year, but I think I'll be interested to see what he can do with more opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But he'll also be seeing the other team's best cornerback, which will be an adjustment.
Yes.
Jeremy, we always appreciate it. Thank you very much. Let's go next to Steve. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hey, fellas.
Hey.
Hey, Brent. Rob, this is the best I can come up with for a question. I know sometimes my questions are not very good at all. But what has changed since Monday in UT's football recruitment? Anything, even little stuff, since me and you last talked?
Nothing has changed in 3 days that I'm aware of for a team that has 24 commitments.
Okay. Well, okay then. I'll leave y'all be.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
One thing I don't remember when it happened. I don't know if it was Monday or later, but Dietrich Pennington did eliminate Tennessee.
Okay. I heard that the day it happened, actually.
I can't remember if it was Monday or not, but that's kind of the most recent thing I would say that has changed.
Well, okay, fellas. Y'all hang in there. Maybe Brent will be on tomorrow, right? So I'll try to come up with a decent question for him.
Brent will be back on with us next Thursday.
Next Thursday, okay.
Next Thursday.
The producer had told me earlier that Brent would be on tomorrow. And I thought, well, okay, then what's going on?
Then
I don't have anything worthwhile, I guess. You did mention, I will make sure I understood, y'all were talking about players at Tennessee for next season. And was you talking about Palmer, that you thought he could really be a good receiver?
I'll be interested to see what he can do when he's kind of the presumptive number one guy. And that's just, based off we go back and watch a game from last season every week as a staff, and he was outstanding in the Missouri game. Just made some absolute circus catches on what was a career night for Jared Quarantano.
Yeah, and I thought he came on, and so it will be something to see if he can pick up where he left off. And it is a huge when you go from being somebody that they have to account for to being the primary plan on defending a position group, sometimes that can be a difficult transition when you get all the attention. But, Steve, thank you very much. Let's go next to Scott. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Scott.
Hey, fellas.
Hi.
How you doing?
Doing well.
Maybe I could do the Steve thing, right?
Tough act to follow, Scott.
Yeah. Hey, Rob, in regards to linemen, either offensive or defensive, obviously this class doesn't have a lot going on, it seems, but there's still some people out there that we're after. What kind of possibilities are realistic?
Well, I think the defensive line target board, I think, looks a lot better. And real, I mean, you got a real shot with Peyton Page, four-star defensive tackle from over North Carolina. A very real shot with Tyrion Ingram Dawkins, another North Carolina defensive tackle. Trevali Price, and more of an edge guy, also from Carolina. Those are three guys that I think Tennessee is in the top two or three for. All very legit candidates.
Now, the offensive line board, recognize those names, yeah.
The offensive line board is shrinking. I don't know if you heard us talking right there. Dietrich Pennington, in-state kid from down outside of Memphis, just put out a top five the other day that did not have Tennessee in it.
I missed that,
So, I mean, I'm not saying Tennessee was counting on him by any means, but I think it was a surprise that they weren't one of his top three or five schools. William Parker, the kid from Nashville, is a guy that Tennessee is heavily involved with. I think they're in good shape there on the offensive line. And Diego Pounds, a really big guy from over in Raleigh. Those are the top two that I would say on the offensive line board. So, I mean, offensive line is a mid. They're always going to have two or three. Right now, Tennessee's sitting on the one. So that's something they need to have going forward. But I would feel pretty good about adding at least one or maybe even two of those defensive linemen I threw out there. And with several guys already in the boat, not quite the need that offensive line is right now.
Okay, very good. Couple comments real quick. I know Bobby Majors, Johnny's little brother, was on this week. And correct me, guys, if I'm wrong. And I was born in 63, and I think it was 71 when we played Penn State at Knoxville. And Bobby made maybe one or two interceptions at that point, and we wound up beating Penn State, I think, or 71, 73, somewhere right in there. And then that was my real first taste and really ingrained into Tennessee football at that point, So the Majors name goes way back for me. And then secondly, a couple years ago, Jimmy and John, y'all had Johnny down at Big Kahuna's there in Farragut, in West Knoxville. And I happened to be in there that afternoon, and he comes over and says hello to me and so on and so forth and gets to talk with me a little bit. And I tell him my first Tennessee football game, and it happened to be Clemson and Tennessee, and it was when Larry Sievers made the winning two-point catch in the end zone to win the game. And he looks at me and he says, "I wasn't there then." And he turns around and walks off. It's like, if it's not about me, baby, I don't want to talk about it. And I'm just pouring my heart out about how I'm so orange, and it's like, well, I don't give a crap. But what an incredible individual, and all that he accomplished and his desire to succeed was incredible. And I would love to think that I could follow those footsteps, but listen, guys, thank you. I appreciate you. I listen to you every day. Have a great afternoon, and go Vols.
All right, we sure do appreciate it. Thank you very much, Scott. We will get a break. We've got more with Rob Lewis coming up. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. This hour brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. More with Rob Lewis coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Rob Lewis of BallQuest.com. 656-9900, 656-9900. We continue with calls. It's Artie who joins us next. Hello, Artie.
How are you fellas doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Well, fine. You know, this time of year is when I always get interested in strength and conditioning. And I keep, you know, one year we'll have one that's so-so, and then we'll get one that's just a guru of strength and conditioning. And I don't ever see anything that shows an output. So I don't know how kind of analysis they do. You know what I'm saying? None of that makes sense.
Well, okay, what's your question or point?
The question is, does anybody ever look at what the strength and conditioning coach has accomplished and tie it in how line play is? You see what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's any question, Rob, that, one, Jeremy Pruitt knew exactly what he was looking for in a strength and conditioning coach, and he had one that was very highly regarded for the last 2 years, his first 2 years leading the program. And unfortunately, he went back to the NFL, but I don't think there's any question that that Coach Pruitt knows exactly what he wants his strength and conditioning, I guess, department to be.
Yeah, and I think that's why you're going to see the hire come from inside. Because I mean, I think he likes the way that it's set up. I think he feels comfortable that he can tap a guy from that is already in the building to keep doing the things that they're doing now. And I think, like I said, I think he has a lot of confidence in how things are set up right now, and does not want to bring in somebody with a different kind of philosophy.
Well, thank you.
Anything else, Artie?
Well, no, I was just thanking you for your answers. And one more question, if I could do it. What about, you know, they see all those keeping their statistics. You know, they supposedly keep on all, every play or something. And I just wondered how well that worked.
How well that's working. Well, Jimmy and Rob, you guys have seen it up front in covering the games. They've got a crew of people that that tabulate the box score / statistics. It's amazing what they tabulate now compared to what they used to track or have as their box score.
Well, they I'm not sure what he's getting at. I'm not sure, but Tennessee does a lot of calculation. They do a lot of stat work. They self-scout to make sure that they're not tipping off too much. They scout another opponent to see if they can find out tips. They do run a ton of numbers to see where they're effective, where they're not as effective. We've heard Jeremy Pruitt talk about how they need to force more turnovers. He's got stats on when you win the turnover margin, what your winning percentage is, if it's plus one or plus two on turnover margin. Plus two, by the way. The winning percentage is very, very high. But they chart all that stuff and base a lot of the things they do off of the numbers that they derive.
Artie, we sure do appreciate it. Let's go next to David. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, David.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Doing well. How
good,
are
David?
You?
Doing good. Hey, a couple quick questions, Rob. I live down around the Bradley County area. I caught the segment here at the end, so it's maybe this commitment has been brought up. But the Trey Curry commitment here recently, what do you see the future holds with him? How does he fare? I mean, I know he's, you know, young, but I'm just curious. He's got a good body on him, good size kid. What is your thoughts on him, and what would he see in the future with him, you know, of course, with some
Well, that was kind of an awkward situation on Saturday because that's not a tip that Tennessee was ready to take, and so he's not on the commitment list. As I said, that was an awkward situation. I think somebody Tennessee is continuing to look at and evaluate, but I'll kind of be surprised if Tennessee takes another receiver in this class and lets us a superstar type kid.
Okay, yeah, I didn't. You know, like I said, I saw just my son who follows Banana in this area saw that he had made, you know, an Instagram post. I didn't know any more about
that. Yeah, he did. Apparently, he didn't speak with the coaches before he did that.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. Another question, and guys, I may have not, you know, I'm sure not have heard of this. When or have we heard anything on the eligibility of Cade Mays? What do we expect or when that might be?
I checked on it yesterday, and I was told Tennessee did not have an answer yet on Cade Mays. The one reason I checked is because some other people have been declared eligible. They've already gotten some waivers. So that was of yesterday morning. Rob, you may have more recent news than I do. Do you?
No, I don't have anything new on that, Jimmy. But anybody that, you know, close to the situation that I've spoken to seem to have a lot of confidence that he's going to get news. And I don't know what the exact batting average is, but I bet if you go and look and see which kids' families have been able to retain lawyers and which kids haven't, as Cade has, then I think that you see a pretty high success rate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say, you know, I would guess that, of course, any attorney is going to use, I mean, with Cooper on campus now, that, you know, that's going to be some good leverage, I'm sure, to try to get that eligibility in pretty soon. Okay? You agree, Rob?
Yes. I mean, I think, you know, whether it's the reason you transferred or not, I mean, the whole COVID-19 deal and wanting to get close to home is a pretty easy argument to make right now, I think.
Oh, okay. Okay, I see where you're going. Well, guys, listen, I appreciate it. Thank you for answering my questions. You guys have a good afternoon.
You too, David. Thank you very much. Let's go next to Bob. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Bob.
Hey, guys. How are y'all doing?
Doing well. Bob. Hope you are.
Yeah, trying to stay cool out here. It's going to be 111 today in Scottsdale.
Oh, boy.
It's a dry heat, though.
Yeah. It's a dry heat.
Oh, yeah. It only feels like 108.
Every time somebody says that to me, I say, yeah, go put the oven on 350 and stick it in there and tell me how good that feels.
Yeah, or just ask a roasted chicken. It's along the same thought.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to make a comment and then ask a question. Yesterday when y'all were telling all the stories about Johnny Majors, talking about the Sugar Bowl game, I was at that game, and I remember, I think it was the first play, not the first set of downs, but the first play, Miami threw a bomb for a touchdown. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, they scored first.
Yeah.
Gosh, I don't remember being the first play.
I think it was the first play. And I said, oh, my goodness, we're going to get really embarrassed on national TV. And then we came back and won 35-7. So, yeah, that was an awesome game. Here's my question. I read all the articles about all the commitments, and what I've noticed for like two, three years, every one of them seems like says it just felt like home up there. It just felt like home up there. And I know you guys aren't on a visit, but I wondered, do you guys know, you know, what goes on in a visit that makes all these guys say, well, it just felt like home. I just was real comfortable up there.
I think in my experience that it's more about the people than the place. I mean, it's more about, you know, the coaching staff being able to, you know, in most cases, you're already going to have a relationship, you know, with the coaches. They, by the time you make an official visit, they've been recruiting you for over, you know, in some cases over a year, maybe close to 2 years. So you've got the sense to know them. And then I think it's really about something I think people underestimate is how the recruits, you know, view the current players, because those are the guys that they're spending most of their time with on a visit. And I'll give credit Brent Hubbs for just saying that. I mean, I think it's really true, is that your players are your best recruiters. I mean, because people may not want to believe it or not, but if a 22-year-old kid, if you have a senior on your team that's having a bad experience, feels like he's been jerked around by the coaching staff, feels like he's been lied to, and he's around a recruit on a visit, he's going to say, "Hey, don't come here. Don't jerk you around." And I think what you see at Tennessee is that the current roster in football has really bought into Jeremy Pruitt. They trust him. They think he has their best interest at heart. They think he knows what he's doing. And so when they say feels like home to me, that says more about the people, specifically the players. And it's certainly true on the basketball side, where you're dealing with a far smaller number. And guys, if you have one or two bad apples in a basketball locker room, it really can, send things sideways. And culture is really important there, just because of the small number of people you're dealing with. And, if everybody's around everybody every day, whereas on a football team, there may be guys that you don't do anything more than say hello to over the course of a week. If you're depending on if you're on offense, you're on defense, you're in a different part of the locker room, that kind of thing. So that's a long answer, but the short answer is, I think that when you hear kids say that, it's about the people, it's about the relationships, it's about feeling comfortable, with the guys who are going to be your peers when you get there.
Okay, well, thank you. Next time you read one of these recruiting stories where we're announcing about it, just start looking at that and see how often you see, man, it just felt like home up there. So thanks, guys. I appreciate talking to you.
Bob, sure do appreciate it. And Rob, as you just spoke to, a lot of that comes from building relationships. And not only that, but if you have the opportunity to connect with other guys that are a part of that same signing class, that's something else that can add to it. But covering both football and basketball as you do, I don't think there's any question. There are a lot of similarities, I think, between Coach Pruitt and his staff, how they recruit, compared to Coach Barnes and his staff and how they recruit. And that's the ability to identify kids that they know they want to come play for them, and just working those kids for 12 months, 18 months, even multiple years before getting them to sign, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, they and assistant coaches that I've talked to, especially on the basketball side, they know very early in the process whether or not, this kid is going to be able to take the kind of coaching he's going to get from Rick when he gets here. If it's the kind of kid who, his dad or his uncle, needs to hear, get a phone call from the head coach every week and, just to stroke his ego, then that's not a Tennessee recruit. That's not a guy that Tennessee's, going to go all in on. And I think the thing, when you mentioned both of them, in my experience, John, I think the thing that really stands out about Jeremy and Rick both, and which I think players and parents appreciate, is that they're just honest. They don't give you a sales pitch, and then when you get to campus, it's the experience, the reality is not like what the recruiting experience was. I mean, I think they're honest on the front end, and they're both really good at telling uncomfortable truths, in terms of criticism. And I think that's, it may be tough for a kid to take at first, but over the course of time, that honesty is, I think people really appreciate it, and you don't end up having to, go cover your tracks and, double back and try to make up for some lie you told, to deceive somebody into thinking they were getting into something that is not actually the case.
That's Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com. We've got another segment with Rob coming up. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. This hour brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screen. A final segment to hour number three of Sports Talk is next on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
Guys, I'm bringing the party to you.
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Ladies and gentlemen, please direct your attention to the field for a special and historic presentation. On this day, the University of Tennessee will formally retire the jersey of one of its all-time great players, number 45, Jesse Majors.
Final segment to hour number three of Sports Talk, a final segment with Rob Lewis, pinch hitting for Brent Hubbs this week, both of AllQuest.com. Let's squeeze in a quick call from KC. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, KC.
Oh, I didn't know I was going to be blessed with the great Rob Lewis. I've got to make sure it's just a basketball. Rob, you're the UT inside on basketball, I've heard.
That he is.
Is that correct, Rob? Yeah, that's it. You're the inside guy. Rob, I got a couple of things here. I got a couple of things. UT just lost a basketball coach, Aubrey. I can't think of his name. I'm probably going to
go wreck Faro.
Him. Are they
go
yes,
Faro?
Is it okay? Are they look? Can this guy, the next guy they hire, could he be a recruiter?
No.
Or is this somebody on the?
It's a behind the scenes position. Auburn was a director of player development or player relations or something. I mean, really good guy. He was originally from the Central Republic of Africa, which is a French-speaking country, and I don't want to downplay his role, but really, I think the main reason for bringing him in at the time was when Tennessee started recruiting so many international guys. Auburn was a guy with a lot of overseas contacts, a lot of overseas experience, and also a guy that spoke several different languages that could, you know, somebody East Ponds could hang out with and, you know, and be a mentor, but also just, you know, be able to relax and speak French. And, you know, kind of, so that's a behind the scenes job that, you know, I don't know what Rick will do with it, but it's not a recruiting position.
Okay, so we can't get Mike Miller to replace him from Memphis, right? I'm kidding.
No.
I'm kidding. Because Mike definitely doesn't speak after. Okay. Let me know something. With Mike Miller gone, does that help our chances with Kennedy Chandler? I think we've got a pretty good shot at him.
I don't really think it affects it hugely. And I think from my understanding, it feels like Kenny has done a lot of the heavy lifting there. And it certainly doesn't hurt, don't get me wrong, you know, for it to look like Memphis made that. Have some instability out there, you know, on the staff, and you know, with some of the smoke that's been out there with, you know, the James Wiseman deal and all that, you kind of wonder if Miller was getting out ahead of the posse. So I don't know if that's the case, but that's certainly, I mean, it just paints a little Memphis with a little brush of instability there, which for Tennessee is big. But people that I know that cover Memphis, they don't think Memphis is in it really. I've had someone tell me that Chandler pretty much put them in his top five as a courtesy to avoid, you know, backlash from locals who would, you know, who are crazy for the program.
So Kennedy leaving, going to Kansas, does that help our chance? I really like the fact that Rick Barnes and I hope this is not taken the wrong way, but he tends to go with kids with a father figure, and I think it really helps. He doesn't sugarcoat anything, and I think it really helps. And the players that he goes after, even though they're five stars, they're players that have a father figure. And I'm not saying necessarily a father, but a father figure. And it just his outlook, you know, across the United States is really looking good with the kids that he goes after. So I really appreciate and go ahead.
I guess the way I would say it, he goes after kids that don't have a problem with authority being, you know, with having their feet held to the fire, that are used to, you know, some discipline, and you know, don't have to have things sugarcoated for them. And I think that's certainly the case with Kennedy. He comes from a really good family, and I think his transfer to Sunrise was just about competition, because, you know, playing at a small private school like he did, I just don't think he was challenged very often, you know, unless they went to some big tournament or if they were in the state tournament. And now, you know, not only is he playing against college level competition and his opponents, I think just as importantly, he's practicing with guys who are going to be high major players every day.
KC, we appreciate it. Always good to hear from you. Rob, what's going on these days at VolQuest.com?
Opponent previews are starting. I just heard Josh Dobbs say kickoff was 93 days away. So we're starting to take a look at, you know, what's coming up for Tennessee. Got a little creative content where we're going back the past 35 or 40 years with the Tennessee basketball program and, you know, kind of doing some putting all what I arbitrarily thought were the 32 best players, put them in four brackets of eight, and are kind of, you know, having a poll to see who's going to come out on top.
How's the early portion of that going with the bracket?
It's chalk all the way so far. We've got just put our second one up today. The first one went totally according to seeding, with Bernard King, the one seed in his region, advancing. Tony White, the two seed, advancing. Jordan McRae, the three seed, and Vincent Yarbrough, the four seed, all advancing in their first round matchups.
We got a Tennessee decommit. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Ah, all right, that we will. Rob, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much, and we will talk to you Monday.
Thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
All right, sure to appreciate that. And that's Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com, pinch hitting for Brent Hubbs. This hour brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screens.